Good evening. Welcome to Council Connection for the month of March. I'm your host, Steve Dresser. This month, we'll be spending a lot of time with Frank Ventura as he shares a unique hobby of his with us. But we'll get started by talking to Bob Hache about Blind Day. Good evening, Bob. Welcome back to Council Connection, or I should say welcome to Council Connection for the first time this year.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
Good to be back. It has.
Good to be back. Yeah.
Well, we are going to be talking about Blind Day, which I would like you to explain for those. It's
sure.
an annual event here, but there are people who may not know.
Okay, we'll begin with the acronym here. It is BLIND. It stands for Blindness Legislative Information and Networking Day, and this will be our 10th annual. Interestingly enough, it's going to be the 11th year that we've attempted it, but last year's event didn't go off because it got canceled twice by snowstorms.
I know.
Which makes this year's event all the more important.
Yeah.
Although last year's event was very successful, we were very successful in getting a substantial increase for the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind.
So even though people didn't show up at the Capitol, because I guess there's really two parts to this, right? I mean, it's
Oh, sure there is. There's people showing up and there's people, you know, at the end, I'll be telling everybody how to contact their state senators and representatives to advocate for what it is that we're looking for. And this is all about the state budget. In this case, it is the fiscal year 2020 budget. Fiscal years begin on July 1 of the year. So, for example, we are still in fiscal 2019, and that ends on June 30th. So Blind Day this year is going to be on March 19th at the State House. In the Great Hall, where it's
I believe that's a Tuesday, actually.
It is a Tuesday.
For those who might want to know those things.
And what happens is there is lunch first, and there's usually a few demonstration tables. For example, there'll be some Perkins products, probably some demonstrations from the Braille and Talking Book Library, and perhaps some of the other places, such as some of our other sponsors. And the sponsors include the Bay State Council of the Blind, NFB of Massachusetts, Massachusetts Association of the Blind and Visually Impaired, Lowell Association for the Blind, National Braille Press, the Perkins Talking Book Library, and I'm sorry if I forgot anybody. I think I got just about everybody in there.
All right.
And,
well. You know,
and the really neat thing about this event is that not only do you get together and have a nice lunch with people, but you get to walk around with sighted assistance in the State House, which is a very difficult building to get around for those of you that haven't been there. And the way this sets up, when you register, it asks you, for example, if you know who your state reps and senators are, and if you do, then they don't tell you who. If you tell them that you need help with that, though, they will look up by your address and tell you who your state rep and senator is, along with what room numbers they're in to go to. And by registering, you guarantee that you get lunch and a volunteer. People that show up, and some people do, you know, show up the last minute. They usually get lunch, but I've heard of cases where people showed up last minute and maybe the lunches ran out.
Well, that's always a possibility. I mean,
that's
with
right.
anything like that, you
it's
you can
always
only,
better to register. Yep.
That's right. Yep. Now, is there a cost to registration?
Nope. Okay. No, sir. Nope.
Okay.
Just got to spend a little time, and the form is pretty straightforward. For those that want to go online and do it, you go to www.perkins.org/statehouse. That's all small letters, www.perkins.org/statehouse.
Okay.
And for those that would rather register over the phone, you can contact Erin Fragola at the Perkins Library, ErinFragola at 617-972-7247. Again, that's 617-972-7247.
We should also talk about the deadline for registration.
I don't know
if there
is
one.
I didn't see a deadline in here. I can go look. I'll put in a deadline of the Friday previous to the event, which would be what, the 15th?
Yeah.
I should think that, yeah.
It would make sense just in terms of lunch planning and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, really, if you know you want to go, you know, register.
As
soon as possible after you've heard this. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. But no, I don't see any deadline here. I think they like to encourage people. And, you know, I mean, they always do order a little bit of extra food. And so what happens is you will get information, including the agenda for the day, and I'll go over that a little bit, as well as the talking points and the budget initiatives that we're looking to forward. And you can get those either in Braille, large print, or email, and that's also a part of what happens when you register. And just a brief overview of the agenda, 11:30 to 12, lunch will be served. And there's usually, as I said before, demonstration tables from some of the organizations, which we've mentioned before. And, you know, NBP might have some Braille books. I'm not sure they'll be selling them, but you'll be able to look at them. And Perkins Products tends to have a little bit of technology and computer equipment, particularly assistive technology. And Perkins table at the Talking Book Library, you're likely to see something like the digital player. I don't know if they have any newfangled things or anything like that, but I'm sure that they'll have people there. You know, if, for example, if you've never signed up for library service, they'd be able to sign you up, you know, things of that nature.
Well, and this is also a good chance for sighted people who are there who are unfamiliar with what is available to us to actually get a look at that.
Ah, yes, that's a very good point, Steve. Yep, yep, sure, yep. And so then from 12 to 1:15, there will be presentations from a variety of speakers. They usually have an adult who's new to blindness, been to a place perhaps like the Carroll Center or some similar such training center. They'll have like a student. They might have a young student, as in a high school student. They might have a college student. And they're just different examples of blind people that benefit from the services of Perkins, of the Braille and Talking Book Library, and also a special education, you know. And some of the assistance that you get around there when you're going to, you know, regular schools, which the majority of blind people do now go to regular schools as opposed to, you know, a residential blindness school, the way that some of us did when we were younger. And
right, right.
I was lucky enough to be able to do both and, you know, things like that. So a little bit about what we're asking for this year. For the Commission for the Blind, we're asking for $250,000 over and above the governor's proposed budget. Just a brief, very, very brief setup on how the budget works. The governor's budget came out, that is a budget proposal, in late January. The House and Senate will then come up with budgets of their own, and they're usually all a little different. And then they get the House and Senate bills get reconciled at the end, so that by when you're getting near the end of June, there'll be a final, well, an almost final budget that will go to the governor, and he can either sign it or he can veto parts of it if he wants to. And then the legislature can decide if they want to override that veto, which would take a two-thirds majority. And that's a very quick overview of how the budget process works. So we're looking for $250,000 for assistive technology training and equipment for seniors, and particularly those new to vision loss and visual impairment. The Talking Book Library is looking for a 1% increase. That's approximately $13,000 for the Worcester Talking Book Library and approximately $77,000 for the Watertown Library. And just briefly, Worcester Library covers the central part of the state. The Perkins Library in Watertown covers eastern and western Massachusetts.
Yep.
Yeah. And there's the other area, and I don't have any numbers for this one, unfortunately, is special education funding and Chapter 766, otherwise known as the circuit breaker account. I do not know why they call it that, but it is something that, you know, that will be in the in fact sheets and information that gets distributed to you either. And if you ask for email, you will get it in advance. If you ask for Braille or large print, you will receive it the day of the event. And one final point, and this is for those who can't make it. We'd love as many of you as possible to come to the State House, but if you can't make it, you can still be extremely helpful to us by advocating for our budget increases that we're looking to do. And the way that you do that is you contact your state representatives and senators. The easiest way to do that is via telephone by calling 617-722-2000. And from there, you can either ask for House or Senate. And if anyone has any other questions or would need a little coaching on how to advocate for some of these funding increases, you can feel free to call me, Bob Hachet, at 781 893-6251, or you can email me at bhachey@verizon.net. That's bhachey@verizon.net. But if you want a quick response, you're much better off picking up the good old telephone.
Let's hope that this year the weather cooperates with us and doesn't punch holes in our efforts.
Let's not have a day like Monday, March 4th this year. We don't want that.
Well, or like the two that we had last year that brought the whole thing to a screeching halt. Yeah, but I think it's important to remember that due to the advocacy and people contacting their representatives, our points got heard despite the uncooperative weather.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, this type of advocacy is at the heart of the mission of Bay State Council of Blind Folks. And so, you know, we're all very interested in having as many of you participate in events like this as possible.
Anyway, Bob, thank you for bringing us up to date on what's going on with Blind Day. And let's hope that a lot of people participate and make it a truly successful event this year.
Hear, hear.
You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. The show also airs on the second Tuesday of the month on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 p.m. Eastern. You can find past shows in the Council Connection archive at www.acbfma.org. Our next guest has been a model railroad enthusiast for most of his life. From time to time, I've heard Frank Ventura talk about the trains he has in his basement, but I never knew how much he liked them until we spent some time talking about the subject. I strongly urge you to don a comfortable pair of headphones as Frank and I discuss his unique and interesting hobby. Frank, it's good to have you on the show again.
Thank you, Steve. It's good to be here again. Haven't been on Council Connection in a while. And usually we're on the phone, but today we're actually sitting in the comfort of my TV room.
Yeah, and the reason for that is because we're going to talk about something that you are doing. I remember when I was a kid, there were people that had electric train sets, but they were usually fairly small, maybe on one table that might be, 4 or 5 feet square or, something like that, but certainly nothing big. But you've kind of taken that way beyond anything I ever conceived of when I was a kid. And that's what we're here to talk about.
Thank you, Steve. Well, it's been a hobby of mine for 4 decades, and I've been in many facets of the hobby, as most hobbies. There's all sorts of different subgenres of the hobby, and this is just one more step along the road.
How did you get into this?
Okay, well, let's got to rewind the tape a little bit. Back when I was a very young lad, about 4 years old, I lived in the Bronx, which is part of New York City. It's the uptown part, so it's the northernmost borough of New York. And I remember it was a hot summer day. My mother took me downtown. She had to go to some social services agency, and I'm not entirely sure if I ever learned what that agency was. I believe it probably had something to do with child support, because this was not too long after my father left. So we got dressed up in the morning. I remember it was a very hot day that day. And, as tradition goes back then, whenever you went downtown, you'd get fairly well dressed. So we were both dressed up in probably our best. And we took the subway, got on a 6th train. It's kind of a little bit of a now famous subway line, because Jennifer Lopez, who grew up in my same neighborhood as I did, named one of her albums On the 6th, and that was a reference to the 6th train.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And we went downtown, and so we got to this building, and we went to whatever office this was. Never really learned what it was, but I believe it was probably child support. And I had to stay outside in the waiting room, and this was back in the 70s, mid-70s. So I sat on a hardwood bench in a very hot, non-air-conditioned office.
As only New York can be.
Oh, yeah. It had the wonderful little smells of the city going through the open windows, and the heat. And, but I knew it was important because we were dressed up, and so I certainly was not going to say anything to anyone. Not that anyone would have listened to a 4-year-old kid sitting on a bench anyway.
Absolutely not.
So we were there for many hours, and on the way back, unbeknownst to me, I don't know if she had this planned or she just decided to do something enjoyable. We stopped in a toy store that was downtown Manhattan, and it's pretty famous, or was pretty famous. It's now defunct. It's called FAO Schwartz.
I have heard of it.
Yes. So this was a toy store of toy stores. This is some of the best toys you could ever find. And she took me in there and walked along looking at all these nice, beautiful little toys, games, puzzles, all sorts of stuff. And then we went upstairs. And upstairs they had the trains.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I was mesmerized.
I'll bet.
It was love at first sight. And I was so mesmerized, I can't tell you, Steve, if I was in there for 5 minutes or 5 hours.
Seemed like 5 minutes no matter how long.
Yeah,
it
when
was.
Time stands still, you know something has a big impression on you.
Yes, absolutely.
So the next couple of years, I'd occasionally walk past one of the hobby stores in the Bronx, and I'd poke in, and if I had enough money saved, usually about a dollar, I'd buy a Model Railroad magazine, I'd take it home, and I'd study it and read it. And
sure.
Go to the library and find whatever books they could have on that. And then I was 8 years old, and I believe it was for my birthday. Came home one day, and guess what was on the kitchen floor?
Oh, wow. Really?
It was a train.
A whole train. Now, when you saw those trains in FAO Schwartz, were they running, or were they just sitting there doing nothing? Or?
Oh, no. FAO Schwartz would never have things just sitting there, do nothing.
Oh, they were...
Oh, they had a real operating layout.
Certainly. Oh, wow. Yeah. Nice, yeah. Nice.
It's a shame that store is not there anymore. That was
a little
bit of heaven for toy lovers.
Well, and there were a few of those kind of stores. I mean, I think up here, Jordan Marsh might have been a store like that. Although I don't know if it was on the same scale, but I do remember as a kid going through Jordan Marsh and seeing, in fact, that's where I got my first bicycle.
Did you?
Well, so, you know, kind of the same thing, but nobody does that kind of stuff anymore.
It was a
brand called a Merton. I've never heard of it anywhere. I think it was a German make, which, I mean, the name doesn't sound very German, but for some reason I remember it being German. But it was a bike. I saw it, and I liked it, and I had to have it, and I got it. And anyway, we're kind of drifting away from the subject here of the trains and what they did for you and what you obviously did with them.
Okay. So I was 8 years old, and it was only a mere circle of track with one little locomotive and two little cars behind it.
Yeah, that's kind of the kind of thing I used to see when I was a kid. You know, that's what people had.
And that stayed with me for many, many years. In fact, that train set's still up on the shelf next to my fireplace. So I still have that one.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
So fast forward till adulthood, and now I'm off on my own, and I'm making my own money, and I steadily collected trains over the years, and depending on where I was, dictated what I was able to do with it.
Sure.
I lived on Long Island for a while, and I had a fairly small place, so I had a small, little bit of, like you said, the little ambiguous 4x8 sheet of plywood layout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Then I lived in Connecticut, and I had a fairly big house in Connecticut. With a lot of possibilities. I had a whole upstairs that was heated and air conditioned, so I had an indoor layout. Then outside, I had a pretty good sized yard, so I had a nice little outdoor layout as well, and ran trains in the snow as well. And
oh.
Yeah, and on the outside, I did a replica of a Swiss European railway, and when it snowed, it kind of looked like it was going up in the Alps and everything like that. So.
And those are also electric?
That was electric, yeah.
Now, how does that work in snow? I mean, doesn't that make it kind of at least dangerous to be running and playing with, voltage there?
No, I mean, voltage is very low. It was never more than 18 volts. And
okay.
I had a little snow plow. I used to send it out and plow the little tracks.
I love it.
Yeah, so it was all a lot of fun. And in upstairs in the attic, I kind of had like a big long room, very long and skinny type of attics.
Sure.
So it kind
which of is the way most attics
reminded
are.
Me of the plains of the United States with these long cornfields and grain silos. So I had a layout with some Western style trains with a bunch of freight cars and going across prairies and stuff like that. So you kind of look at the surroundings you have and use your imagination to determine what could you do with them, that type of thing.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what it strikes me, that a lot of this for you is a a process of your imagination and what you can create. And
so we'll talk about that. And so now, here, being here in Boston, I start all over again, you know, new house and new town and everything like that. And I find myself, you know, missing my roots back in New York. So I realized I never had an urban-style layout. Nothing was ever based on, you know, the city. Like I said, I had layouts about the plains of the United States, Swiss Alpine trains, German suburban commuter trains, but never in a city type of layout. So, you know, I'm thinking back to the times, my childhood in the Bronx, in the city, in New York City, in the 70s. So now I'm thinking about, well, I'd like to, you know, do something reminiscent of my days back in New York City. So it's now urban layout, and it's based on basically New York City in the 70s, very kind of reminiscent of the 70s. And like you said, the best part is imagination. You just, my ideal toy train layout is just put enough action and activity into the layout where your imagination takes over and does the rest.
Right.
So I'm lucky enough to have a nice finished basement down there, and we're going to see it in a minute. And so again, I just plotted it around the space. This is what I have, and this is what I like to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it strikes me that as with most elaborate hobbies like that, and I certainly know this is true of ham radio, and of course, when I was a kid, I never had any money to spend on radios, and once I got to be an adult and had the money, I expanded my shack to kind of fill the dreams that I had as a kid. But it strikes me that you've had to spend a fair amount of money to get everything that you've got down there. Could you give us a kind of an idea of exactly what you have down there?
You know, a friend of mine is into the same hobby. He says his worst fear is that he's going to die and his wife will sell his collection for what he told her he paid for it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, there's always a financial cost to most hobbies, and it's pretty expensive. But it's all in, one thing that's nice about the hobby, there's a level for everyone. Like I said, there's the little ambiguous 4x8 piece of plywood with a little starter set train set that you could pick up in Walmart or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's one of the parts of the hobby that I tend to like a lot is collecting antique toy trains,
mm-hmm.
trains made prior to World War One, that type of thing.
And you've got some of those even around your house here, too, I think.
Yeah, you found one by accident.
I did. Yep.
Yeah. That was always a lot of fun, yeah.
And now some people have very elaborate town-type models. And I mean, I've seen people whose train sets went around the entire perimeter of their living rooms. And, they had, replicas of various buildings in the towns and stuff. You didn't quite do that, did you? I mean,
there were times when, with some of my previous layouts, where I was obsessed with making everything exactly to scale.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect miniature representation of a particular place, or time, and scene. Now, like I said, my tastes have gone more towards the toy-ish side of things. I have just enough scenery on the layout and buildings that it gets your imagination started and lets the imagination take over.
Okay. Yeah. But you don't have to, I mean, from what I remember when I came down here about a month ago to kind of scope out the trains, it's not just trains you got here. I mean, you've got subways and commuter rails and all kinds of good stuff.
Okay, so let me give you a brief and mental tour of what I decided to do. So, like I said, I looked at the space we had, and I wanted to bring back the memories of my childhood from New York City. So, one of the biggest things that this is probably any New Yorker will tell you is part of the culture is riding the subway. You can't be a New Yorker without understanding about the culture of the subway.
Right.
It's the arteries and the veins of the city. That's mm-hmm. So I definitely had to have a subway layout, portion to my train layout. So I looked at the space I have, and I decided I wanted to be the trains to be the centerpiece of my basement. A little bit of escape from the world, from the real world to my little imaginary world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I plotted out, and I decided on an 8-foot by 10-foot space in the middle of the basement, which would be my little world in miniature. And it's multi-layered. So the bottom layout is the subway layout. That's the below ground. And the top layout is a street level where you have commuter trains and stations and buildings, and eventually I'm going to have an elevated rail there too. So, and all this takes a lot of time. It's been probably about 4 or 5 years in the making, and I'll probably be working on it for another 4 or 5 years.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. But it's all the things that you and me, Steve, love to do. It's electrical, it's soldering, it's, you know, measuring electricity and current and voltages and continuity. And so the science of it is a lot of fun.
And it's also computer control, isn't it?
These days, yeah, there's a lot of computers have stuck into most of our lives, including the toys to play with.
Yeah.
So one of the options that are available now is computer control of, you know, some of the trains that we have. Yeah. And again, you know, my tastes sway back and forth. Sometimes I like to do that. Sometimes I just like to turn a knob and let the little train run around in circles.
You know? Sure, sure. Yeah. And the last time I was here, one of your trains ran off the rails.
Yeah, we actually ran a train right off the rails.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is that when you do that, there are no injuries, and you don't have to call any medics or anything like that to straighten anything out.
That's a good point you make, because, like I said, this is my world in miniature, and I like to remember all the good parts about the childhood.
Yes.
So there's things that you won't find on my layout. There's no fire stations, because nobody's house is burning down.
That's right.
There's no hospitals, because no one's getting injured or sick. Everyone's happy. Everyone's healthy.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Well, it's certainly now. What would you estimate that your current layout has cost you?
About 10 years off my life, I think.
Yeah,
there's a lot of crawling around on the floor. My knees tend to complain at times about it.
Yep.
I bump my head many, many times.
Oh yeah.
Actually, just whacked my nose just yesterday looking under the layout. Yeah.
Easy enough to do, especially if you're working on that lower layer where you've got the table that's above. Because I think, if I remember correctly, there was about a foot and a half of space between the lower layer and the upper one.
Well, that's a good question. So the trains that I'm using on this layout are what's known as O scale. And O is really a misnomer. It's really zero scale. And when we talk about scales and gauges of trains, these actually go back to the late 19th century, about 1890. A company in Germany called Marklin, I know you've heard of him, Steve.
Yeah, I can't say that I have.
Marklin was a famous train and toy manufacturer in Germany, and they kind of standardized different sizes of trains. So you talk about, I have O-gauge trains, I have 1-gauge trains, or HO-gauge trains that... And the reason they standardize that, so every manufacturer who makes a train in that size will work with other manufacturers, in theory, anyway.
Okay.
So I'm using what's known as O-gauge, and that's 1/48 scale, meaning if you took a real-size train and chopped it in half and half and half 48 times, you get to the size of the train I have.
Okay.
So and approximately 1 foot, or I'm sorry, one inch... would be 4 feet.
Ah, okay.
So we quarter inch to the foot type of scale.
Yep, okay.
So between my lower level and my upper level, I have 6 inches of clearance.
Okay.
Which gives me a 24-foot ceiling.
Yeah.
Which is kind of typical of a subway station, you know, in the metropolitan New York area. So
I
try to keep it somewhat realistic, if not totally realistic. So, yeah. But the fun of it, I think a lot of it is that it just never ends. There's always something more to do on it. You know, there's always one more piece of wiring that needs to be soldered, or one more piece of relay.
Absolutely. Yeah. These things take on a life of their own. I mean, and, you know, that's true of ham radio. It's true of trains. It's true of gardening. I've never run into any truly involving hobby that doesn't take up a lot of time and a lot of energy and just a lot of work. A lot of work. So... where would somebody, if somebody wanted to start doing these kinds of things, where would be a good place for them to get their feet wet, so to speak?
Okay. If they're really serious, I'd actually recommend them join a model railroad club, and there's lots of them around. Because then you meet with fellow enthusiasts, then they could give you, many of them have been in a hobby for decades and decades.
Right.
I've been in a hobby 40 years, and I'm considered a youngster by some of them.
Sure,
And you get a lot of insight as to what works best, and Like I said, there's a level of the hobby for everyone. Everything from, you know, someone who's got a couple bucks in their pocket and wants to get a little train running around the Christmas tree, up to someone who wants to turn their entire house into a world of miniature.
Yeah. And I imagine that there are a lot of online websites and things that you can go to and
certainly, yeah,
get the latest buzz on what's around and who's making what and what's good, what's bad, what's, you know, and all that.
And there's also train stores and train shows and toy stores. Yeah.
Do we have any of those kind of things in the Boston area, train stores?
We certainly do. There's trains, a couple on the North Shore, a couple on the South Shore.
Mm-hmm.
There's none actually in the city right now.
Okay.
There used to be one, and it went out of business probably about a decade ago. But in the surrounding areas, actually, there's definitely a lot in the surrounding towns. I was actually at one yesterday. I was up in one in Malden called Charles Row Supply, which is a very large train store.
Oh.
Yeah, I had to pick up a couple of things. Yeah.
See, and it's interesting because if you're not directly involved in the hobby, you don't even know about these things. I mean, you know, I've been living in the Boston area for, 15 years, and I never knew about that. But why would I? Because I'm not involved in that hobby. But, you know, here this is just like living and breathing to you. I mean, it's just a normal part of your world.
Yeah. And the other thing I like about it is that it's a hobby that gets everyone involved. I mean, it's not gender specific, it's not age specific.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
It's a point, you know, a conversation point for anyone who comes to our house as yourself.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. The old or young, you know, everyone likes to come downstairs and look at the trains. So maybe just look at the old trains on the shelves as well. Sometimes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. All of that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, I'd love to show you a little bit of it.
And we're going to do that.
Take a walk.
All right.
Okay. So we're downstairs now, and we're in the basement here. And just so give people an idea, we're in probably a 20 by 20 room here. And it's paneled. It's kind of like that 70s style paneling. And we've got some carpet on the floor. And along the perimeter of the room, there's some toys. So there's a stereo system. There's a weight bench. There's an old jukebox. There's a recumbent exercise bike. And there's a little bit of a wet bar over on the other side of the room, and beyond here is those doors are the laundry room and the pantry and the boiler room. But we're in the main section of the room, and right here, knock on wood, here's the train table that we're talking about. And
yes, and I am right now standing at one end of this train table. I think does the length of it go?
You're on the long side. You're on the width side. So so you're on a side that's about 10 feet wide.
Okay.
And then the length of it coming from outwards would be about 8 feet. So you're looking at a 10 foot by 8 foot square.
Okay.
And there's also some poles here to hold up the ceiling of the room, and the layout goes around the poles, and the poles kind of look like big office buildings.
Okay.
In the layout, so they're kind of strategically placed.
So some of those are right in the middle of the table?
Yep. Knock it on one. Right
there. Wow.
So right in front of us, there is on the top level here,
okay,
there's a little trolley line that runs back and forth and runs for about 8 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the simplest line in the layout. It's just a little back and forth trolley. It comes inside a little bit of a glass station here, glass top station, and goes across the length of this portion here and ends up right about where you are right now.
Okay.
That one just goes back and forth. That's something really the kids can tend to like. They don't really, when little kids come by, they just want to see a train's move. They don't want to see anything very complicated.
Right.
So below it is my favorite part of the layout, the subway. That's down here.
Yes.
And
yes,
if you could think of a square as a table is, each side has its own little station.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a two-track subway station where, so if you've ever been to New York and think about like what they call the IRT, the Interborough Rapid Transit, there's an uptown track and a downtown track. So you'll have one train going one way, one train going the other. That's basically what this is here.
Okay.
So,
and I see some cars that are sitting right here in front of me. And there are, let's see, there's one, two, three, four.
Yep, four cars.
Yeah.
You got it.
Okay.
So going beyond, and this, and the train tracks on the basement, on the lower level, they go around the entire train and the train table, and there's, you know, four stations.
Mm-hmm.
Now back up to the upper level.
Okay.
So beyond here, there's the main section, and you have some buildings, and seeing as that's the downtown area, They're more urban-style buildings. There's like an office tower, and there's a hotel, and then there's a glass-top train station in the middle, and there's a wooden train station on either end, and there's train tracks to go between stations for the commuter rail.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then over here, because we're sort of simulating the outer boroughs a little bit, the buildings are smaller. They're like one-level buildings, and there's like a wooden church, and there's a playground. And to your right there, there's the train yard, and there's a maintenance facility for the locomotives and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all sorts of little things scattered around. Like there's a gas station in the uptown area, which would be kind of like going towards the Bronx and stuff like that. And there's all sort of things that kind of more appropriate for the areas of the layout. Like the downtown, like I said, has the big, tall office buildings, and the uptown area has a smaller, more run-down, little one-story structures.
Okay.
And then the playgrounds are off in the suburban type of areas, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the buildings I use are made out of tin, and some of them are wood. All of them are made anywhere between the turn of the last century to right about World War II.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I kind of always kind of like the looks of those old tin toys. So
sure.
I tend to collect those. And once in a while, I even build something for myself. Like, I got some inspiration when I was cleaning out my pantry a couple months ago. I found a broken lid, the handle to an old skillet. The handle was broken off. But I was about to throw it out, and I looked at it, and, you know, this reminds me of the bandstands in the parks in the city when I grew up. Because
mm-hmm.
they had a glass toppers round. So
sure.
What can we do with this? So I bought some wooden dowels and a wood base, and I painted it to look like the concrete of the day, and that glass top became the roof of a bandstand that I made.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah, you find inspiration in weird places. You know?
Mm-hmm. So I assume that we're going to get some...
You want to hear Subway
Train. I want to hear some sounds.
I want to hear Subway Train, too. Okay, yes. Let's see what we got.
Sounds to me like the subway.
Oh, yeah.
Next stop, Northeast East Square. Steve, now I know you want to play with the subway train now, don't you?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to hand you the controller here.
Okay. This is going to be an interesting... Okay.
Okay, so you feel a big round knob there?
Yep.
Okay, so let's turn that knob a little to the right.
So far it's not doing anything.
There you go.
Oh, there we go.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So you've turned it to clockwise, you're going to go faster. Turn counterclockwise, you're going to go slower.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Let's see if you could bring it into the station and then turn it clockwise and stop the train. So later, let's see if you get it come right to us. Okay, so slow it down. And turn it clockwise so it stops. Counterclockwise. Okay.
So how did I do?
You did good.
All right.
So you're now a proud engineer. On
I am. I feel so much better. Wow, this is great. This is great.
So we can also bring a big diesel commuter train out. You want to try playing with that?
Sure. Let's try that.
Yeah, I'm going to shut down the subway for now.
Okay.
Okay. Let's bring out the diesel. In fact, I think I have an Amtrak train right on the tracks waiting for us here.
Yeah. Got to make sure. Is that what happened?
I just crashed a train. I'm going to uncrash it.
And unlike the real crash, nobody got hurt. It's kind of like the old days of Dungeons and Dragons where you could get killed twice or three times or four times.
God, they didn't have to get a magic spell to get you back.
Yeah, right. And in this scenario, the 20-foot-tall engineer strolls over, reaches a giant hand down onto the track, lifts the car, and moves it back to wherever, and uncrashes the train. So what happened there? The train just ran off the rail, or
one train was on track already, and then I put the other train on the track. Two things can't occupy the same space.
Yes, indeed. Well, that's kind of a good thing to know, I guess. But you knew that anyway. You just didn't realize what was going to happen.
Let's see. I had the other subway train on the track.
Oh.
Okay, that's what I did.
Oh, no, wait a minute, though, but the diesels are on the upper layer, right? Or are they on the lower?
I actually had a subway train on the upper level, too, for testing. That's what I did.
Yeah.
We can move play with that. Let's see, what station are we on? Find out.
Baychester Avenue.
He's even got the right accent.
Next stop, Freeman Street.
Comes slowly going by me.
Jackson Avenue.
Okay.
Thank you.
clockwise, you go faster. Got that?
Yes.
Feel knob?
Yep.
It's a pretty big train, so you gotta be careful not to go too quick.
Oh, alright, I see the knob. Interesting. If you turn it counterclockwise enough, it starts speeding up. Does that mean it's going in the other direction?
Oh yeah, you go backwards.
Oh, okay. So I assume that right now it's stopped.
Yep, when it's straight up, it's stopped.
Does it stop by itself, or does it stop because I stopped it?
Can you feel at the top of the controller? It stopped by because you stopped it. You feel that there's two notches right above at 12 o'clock. Raise the line to 12. Feel that? Feel those two notches?
Yep.
That's, if you put it right between there, that's stop.
Oh, so okay.
The left is going to be reverse to the right is forward.
Oh, okay. Got it. Oh, yeah, and as soon as I've moved it, I heard the brake.
You heard the air brakes engage, yeah.
We know that Frank is enthusiastic about trains, but Nina, you have to live with them. And how does that go? You are in essence the train widow, if there is such a thing.
Well, I don't know if it's actually considered a train widow, but I think it's cool because it's his passion and he is really into it. And it's something that keeps him occupied, and he gets to use all of his skills manually, gets to use his tools, and figures things out, and something he enjoys.
Now, I know when I was down here at New Year's Eve, you were
operating some of the trains yourself. I saw you playing with the buttons and doing a little bit of that. Is that something that you enjoy, or is it just something you sort of learned how to do because it was there, or something you don't even care about?
Oh, it's something that it's fun to do. It's something to play with, you know, once in a while, especially when you get to see the trains go around. But it's not like a love of mine like it is of Frank's. But
right.
Getting to, you know, make the trains move and play and use the horns and bells and whistles is fun.
And, of course, he's mentioned to me that you have taken him various places when to train shops and some other things like that. So you kind of know, even if it's not your passion, that some of it does kind of rub off, so to speak.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you live with someone who is involved with it an awful lot, you know, just learn about these things. Like anything, if you're around someone who's involved with something all the time, you learn the terminology and you learn about the different aspects of the hobby.
Now, does it ever become a bone of contention in your house about, well, gee, Frank, you just spent X number of dollars on trains and you're not going to go out and buy something else, are you?
No, we don't have those kind of discussions.
Oh, that's good.
He does spend an awful lot of money on his trains, but he also does buy a lot of stuff on eBay or secondhand, and there's a lot of things that he could be spending on money that could be worse than trains and train apparatuses. So
that's for sure.
This stop, 59th Street. Change here for the number 6 local train and BMT, RR, and EE trains on the upper level. Have a nice day.
If you have a hobby or interest you'd like to share with us, please leave me a message in our Fillmore box at 773-572-6312 or fill out the contact form at our website, www.acbofma.org. And with that, we come to the end of another edition of Council Connection. I'm your host, Steve Dresser. I hope you've enjoyed the show, and I look forward to seeing many of you at our convention this weekend on March 8th, 9th, and 10th, and hope you'll join us again next month when we share some highlights from that convention right here on Council Connection. Take care.